facts, please, and beginning in verse 15, 16, and 17. And then, if you would, please turn back to the book of Psalms, chapter 76, and verse 10. Psalm, the 76th chapter, and verse 10. Acts chapter 14 and Psalms chapter 76. This will be the 52nd message in the series on the whole counsel of God. Will be the sixth message relating to the purposes or decrees of God which he laid down before the foundation of the world. That is, this person of God's purpose to do certain things prior to the actual creation of the world, man, and all things therein. And we've been attempting to find out what these purposes were so that they might be able to be understood and to have a better knowledge of what God is doing today in history. Because what is taking place in your life and in my life today is but the fulfillment of an eternal purpose which God settled before the worlds were ever began. Now, in understanding of this, we've seen that God has one eternal purpose, and that is to reveal the glories of Christ to men. And that this purpose is based upon his infinite wisdom, so that what is taking place by a wise God, that he is doing it for his own glory, and that it includes whatsoever things come to pass. In the message last Sunday, then we attempted to show the difference between God's secret or decreed will, which we do not know, and his revealed or commanded will, which we can know. And that the revealed will of God is that which we find in the scriptures, in the law, the commandments, and in the gospel. And in this revealed will, we find that it is God's will that all men keep his law, that all men who are sinners repent and come to Christ, and that God sincerely desires the salvation of all of his creatures. But we also found that he has not purposed in his secret will to regenerate and bring all men to Christ, but that many things take place in the creation which are opposed to God's desire, but they are not opposed to his purpose, which is hidden in himself. Now today, we want to take this subject under the purpose of God as it relates to God's permissive will. The decrees or purposes of God as they relate to his permissive will. Now in Acts chapter 14, verse 15, and saying, sirs, why do ye these things? We also are men of like passions with you, and preach unto you that you should turn from these vanities unto the living God, which made heaven and earth and the sea and all things that are therein, who in times past suffered all nations to walk in their own ways. Nevertheless, he left not himself without witness, in that he did good and gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. Now, verse 16. Who in times past suffered or permitted all nations to walk in their own ways? The scriptures reveal that in God's purposes in creation, he permits or allows certain individuals, nations, and communities to walk in their own ways, even though those ways may be opposed to his revealed will for them. He may command a Pharaoh to let his people go, but he may allow a Pharaoh to refuse to let his people go. That is, in the secret and decreed wills of God, there is what is called a permissive will, and this permissive will is related to sin and evil. God is not the author of sin, but he has decreed to allow his creatures to sin against his commanded will. Now let's go back to the Psalms chapter 76 and verse 10, and we'll see this brought out here. Surely the wrath of man shall praise thee, Yes, even sin and wrath in the hearts of God's creatures shall eventually praise God. How? By God revealing at the judgment, the final judgment, His wisdom in being able to overrule that wrath and to exalt His justice. Even the wrath of man shall praise thee. But now notice, the remainder of wrath thou shalt restrain. Now bear this in mind. When God created man, He can now either prevent that man from sinning, or He can allow or permit that man to sin against his commanded will. Sin did not enter into the universe in such a fashion that God was unable to do anything about it. If it did, beloved, then it means this God is not able to stop it, and it will never end then. So sin occurs by the permissive will of God. And God will use the wrath of man to eventually praise His wisdom in showing how He's able to bring good out of evil. But the remainder of man's wrath, He will restrain. That is, He will hold it back, showing that He has control of sin at all times. So when we come now to God's permissive will, we must understand that because God allows things to occur, it does not mean that they are out of His control. God can either prevent or permit sin at any time to occur in His universe. Now say that again. God can either prevent or restrain sin, or He can permit the creature to do as He wills. Like He suffers all the nations to walk in their own ways, He can prevent or permit evil to occur at any time in His creation. Now this is seen in an example in the Old Testament in the 20th chapter of the book of Genesis with Abraham and his wife Sarah. Sarah, a very beautiful woman. Abraham goes into a certain town, and he knows what the desires of that wicked king of that particular community is going to be when he sees his beautiful wife. So Abraham, in the own frailty of his own heart, which I think was a sinful act, says, "All right, listen, let's tell him that you are my sister so he won't kill me." And so this wicked king then calls for Sarah, and he has some very immoral designs of what he is going to do with Sarah. Now, in Genesis chapter 20 and verse 5, God comes to this king named Abimelech before he is able to defile the purity of Sarah. And here's what he said to this king. The king says to God, "Said he not unto me, she's my sister? And she, even she herself, said he is my brother? In the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands have I done this." Now the king's beginning to say, "I did not know that this was another man's wife. I thought it was his sister." Now look at verse 6. "And God said unto him in a dream, Yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thine heart, for I withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore suffered I thee not to touch her." Now notice, God said to this king, "I withheld thee from sinning against me, and as a result, you were not able to touch Sarah, Abraham's wife." Now here is a case in which that God clearly declares He has the ability to restrain the heart of a person from carrying out even what that heart had originally intended to do. So that if God can do that with this man, He could have done it with Adam. God could have prevented Adam and all the race from ever sinning the same way that He did with a host of the angels which have never sinned. God could have restrained those individuals from doing their own will, but He permitted or allowed them to do so. So God's permissive will may allow you and I to do something which is contrary to what He Himself has commanded, what He Himself desires, but for purposes which shall be fulfilled, which are hid in Him. Now, God's permissive will allows the creature than to go unhindered in his own sinful desires. Let's go to the 106th Psalm and verse 15, and we'll see this in the life of the people of Israel in the wilderness journeys. Psalm chapter 106 and beginning there in verse 15. Let's begin back up in verse 12. Then believed they his words, they sang his praise. They soon forgot his works, they waited not for his counsel, but lusted exceedingly in the wilderness and tempted God in the desert. Now notice verse 15. And he gave them their request, but sent leanness unto their souls. Now we're going to go on back to the 78th Psalm and really get the full picture of this. Here are some people which are wanting something which God is not pleased with, and they pray to God for him to give them that. And God gives them what they want, but he sends leanness unto their soul. God permits them to have that which is not pleasing to him. Now notice, let's go back to the 78th Psalm and read this more in detail here. Verse 18. And they tempted God in their heart by asking meat for their lust. Yet they spake against God. They said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock, and that the waters gushed out, and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? Therefore the Lord heard this and was wroth. So a fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger also came up against Israel, because they believed not in God, nor trusted in his salvation. Though he had commanded the clouds from above, and opened the doors of heaven, and had rained down manna upon them to eat, and had given them of the corn of heaven, man did eat angel food. He sent them meat to the full. He caused an east wind to blow up in the heaven, and by his power he brought in the south wind. He rained flesh upon them as dust, and feathered fowls like the sand of the sea. And he let it fall in the midst of their camp, round about their habitations. So they did eat and were well filled. Now listen, for he gave them their own desire. They were not estranged or restrained from their lust. But while their meat was yet in their mouths, the wrath of God came upon them, and slew the fattest of them, and smote down the chosen men of Israel. For all this they sinned still, and believed not his wonderful works. Now get the picture of this unthankful crowd. God has divided the sea for them. He's led them out. He's provided them with water. He's fed them with manna from heaven, which he describes as food fit for angels. And they said, we don't like that. We want some onions, some leeks, and garlic like we had when we were down there in Egypt. Give us some meat to eat. We're tired of this vegetable diet. Give us some meat. And this displeased the Lord. But what did God do? He sent a flock of quails into the camp, so many that they could just grab them and eat them right there on the spot. That he gave them their request, but he sent leanness unto their souls. Now what was he doing? They requested something which was not what God had revealed he wanted for them. What did God do? He gave them what they wanted. He permitted them to have their desires fulfilled, but in doing so, he also sent judgment upon them. When you put this in the place of Adam, Adam was given a command, obey his God. God permitted Adam to want his own way and disobey God, and God let him have what he wanted, but he also sent judgment in accordance with that. So God may permit that which he does not desire, but he will do it in order to bring good out of it. But the point that we must emphasize is this. While God allows evil to exist, he still rules over it for his own glory. Evil is not separate and independent of the control of God. God is able to control the wrath of men to even bring praise unto his own name. Now let's look in the 45th chapter of the book of Isaiah, and perhaps there will be something here that will give us a real understanding and clarify some things in our own Christian life for us here today. In Isaiah chapter 45, and beginning in verse 1, God is ministering or dealing with a pagan king named Cyrus, king of Persia. And he's going to have something occur in the life of Cyrus. And we read, "Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the 2 leven gates, and the gates shall not be shut." Now back up in verse 28 of the previous chapter. "That saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple, thy foundation shall be laid." Now down in verse 5, let's see something about this God as he reveals himself to this heathen king Cyrus. "I am the Lord. There is none else beside me. There is no God beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me." Now note that very carefully. God said, "Cyrus, I am designing you, though you do not know me personally. But I am using you. You are my servant, which is going to fulfill all of my pleasure." Now look in verse 6. "That they may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is none else." Now here's a very puzzling verse to many pastors, to many Christians, but it's here in the Bible. Listen to it. "I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things." Now, beloved, I didn't insert that into the scriptures. God says here, "I make peace and I create evil. I, the Lord, do all of these things." That used to bother me back in the early part of my ministry. I could not understand, well, how can I approach that? I know God's not the author of sin and evil, and yet here he says that God creates evil itself. And the answer came about a dozen years ago in reading some secular history and a little more understanding of the Bible. And maybe it will be a help to you here today. The Persians were heathens. They lacked the knowledge of the true God. Cyrus was a Persian. If you'll study the Persian religion, here's what they believed about what happened in their lives as their lives were related to the gods. The Persians believed in what was called dualism. They believed in two gods. One God was a good God. The other god was an evil god. And these two gods were forever in warfare with one another. Like there would be the good god over here on this mountain and the evil god over here on this mountain. Neither one was able to control the other. But ever so often they would have a battle and they would come down into the valley. And there they would have sort of an arm wrestling match. And sometimes the good God would pin down the evil God. And sometimes the evil God, he would defeat the good God. And when the good God won, then good things happened to the people. And when the evil God won, then bad things occurred to the people. And so the people then worshiped these two gods. And when good things happened, then they said, the good God's ruling today. And when bad things happened, they said, the bad God's ruling today. But neither God was able to control the other. Now God says to Cyrus, he says, "I want you to know who I am. I am the Lord, and there's none beside me. There's no other God which can overthrow my purposes. There is no God beside me." And he says, "I form the light and I create darkness. I make peace and I create evil. I do all of these things." Now, if you understand that in the light of the Persian religion, it becomes a lot clearer. God is simply saying, not that he is the author of evil, but he is the one which is control of evil. He is the one that he is not like the other gods, in which that the bad God sometimes overthrows the good God. No, he says, I am never overthrown. He says, I have purposes. I create good, but I also permit evil to occur. But I want you to know, Cyrus, it occurs within my dominion. Evil does not occur independent of me. Now, beloved, what has happened today in our modern-day Christianity is that many Bible teachers have fallen into this old paganistic idea of a dualistic God. And they teach that one day God controls your life and the next day the devil controls your life. And that God and the devil are in an arm wrestling match. And one day God's got the devil pinned and good things happen to you. And the next day the devil throws back God's purposes and now the devil's having his will and bad things happen to you. And so it's a flip-flop thing. Good things happen, the good God's ruling. Bad things happen while the devil's ruling. Now that is not taught in the Word of God. The devil is a wicked instrument, but he is an instrument in the hand of God. He can do no more to you than what God's permissive will allows him to do. He cannot come in and overthrow your life without God saying, all right, I have purposes to allow you to do this with my child right here, the same way he did with Job. So that when Job was afflicted at the hands of the devil, Job says, it was the Lord which gave, and it was the Lord which taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Job did not attribute that somehow the devil had overthrown God's purpose in his life, and now then these bad things were happening because God had lost control of the circumstance. No, God says, I am a God which controls both good and evil. There's no other God like me. I alone rule in the heavens and the earth. Now, beloved, I don't know how well that sinks into you, but that's the most comforting teaching. I wouldn't want to live in a world anywhere in which that an all-powerful, loving God that I know was not in control of it. If I thought that there were some thoughts on this world and in some lives that God had no control over, my friend, I'd be scared to death to be in that community, in that area. But God says, I control all things. I permit things to occur, but I restrain them. I rule over them according to my own good pleasure. Well, Pastor, can you give an example of this in the Bible, of how God permits people to do things contrary to his commanded will, and yet at the same time he is in control of that absolute circumstance? Yes, I think we can. Let's go to the New Testament, to the Gospel of John. The New Testament Gospel of John, chapter 19. And here we find Christ on trial before Pilate, in John chapter 19 and beginning in verse 10. Now realize who Pilate is. He's the ruler. He's the authority. He's the one that he speaks and men are put to death. Or he speaks and men are pardoned. So if you come before Pilate and you are the one which is being judged, you are at the mercy of Pilate's will. Now let's see what happens when Jesus comes before this king and how Jesus reacts to him. In verse 10 of John 19, then Pilate said unto him, speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee and have power to release thee? Now you get what Pilate's saying to him? Don't you know, here you're not even replying to me, don't you know that you're within my control? I have but to speak and you're dead. And I have but to speak and you are released. Don't you know that I am the one that you should be looking to because I control your life? Now how did Jesus reply to that? Verse 11. Jesus answered, thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Now, you see the significance? Was Pilate doing his will? Yes. Was Jesus in submission, or was he under the control of the will of Pilate? Jesus said, Pilate, you cannot do a thing against me except God permits it. So you may think that you are in control of my life, but when you rebel against God's commanded will not to murder a person, you'll only be fulfilling his permissive will for your life, because you cannot touch me unless God gives you that ability from above. Now, do you see that? It was against God's commanded will for Jesus to be put to death on the cross. But yet God had decreed to allow man to do this. And man did it freely. But God was in control of the whole thing. The crucifixion of Christ and all the evil that's associated in the world only takes place under the permissive will of God. But, beloved, we must not fall into the old pagan concept that somehow God has lost control and he can't do what his plans or purposes are designed to do. Wherever God exercises his permissive decree, then his commanded will is rebelled or sinned against. Now, what are some of the applications of this? What are some applications of this truth that God may permit you and I here today to do our will, but in allowing us to do it, we'll only disobey him? Then what can this mean to us? Well, beloved, the first thing, it ought to shut our mouths about demanding that our wills be done. Beloved, the only time that we get ourselves into adverse circumstances are when we want our wills rather than God's will, as revealed in the Scriptures. And when we start rebelling against God's revealed will for us and start asking and wanting things which are not in accordance with that, and God lets us go our own way, then that's where our problems begin to occur. You say, do you want your will, Pastor? I want my will the same way that Jesus Christ wanted his will. And his will was to do the will of the Father, which is in heaven. How much more freedom could we desire than that? Do you want more of a free will here today than Jesus himself had? Do you want more freedom than what Jesus' life, who was absolutely ordained in every detail? Do you want more freedom than Jesus had when he was here on earth? My friend, he is the example of the free will of man in subjection to the will of God. But when God grants you and I our own selfish will, then there are where problems begin to arise in our lives. And so we must be careful with this. Now, a second application is this. It shows the oversight and the lack of wisdom of those teachers and ministers in today's church which teach that God has done all he can do, but he can't do any more. Beloved, God has never been frustrated from doing all he pleased to do. God will do all of his pleasure. Now, you hear preachers get up and preach today and they'll say, Jesus came and he died and he rose and he went back to heaven. Now he's done all he can do. Now it's up to you. Oh, what good news is there in that for sinners? It's all up to you. God's done all he can do now. My friend, God didn't go out of the salvation business when Jesus ascended to the right hand of God. He began there exercising grace and calling out sinners unto himself. So watch out for those who would preach and teach, well, God's trying to do something, but he just can't get it done. My friend, God allows things to occur in his universe. But his secret purposes are never frustrated and canceled and checkmated by the devil or man. Give you a brief example of this. When Jesus himself died on the cross, Were those people there doing their own will when they wanted to crucify him?
Yes.
They had a hatred heart. Was the devil doing his will when Jesus died there on the cross?
Yes, he was.
Was God doing his will when Jesus died on the cross?
Yes.
But who was controlling the event? Was it the will of man, the will of the devil, or the will of God ruling over the whole thing? Jesus came and he died, but he died according to the permissive will of God, but God had decreed that out of that death, life shall be accomplished. So we must always be careful of not limiting what God can do and what he can't do, because we read in the Bible that certain people resisted the will of God. They resisted his commanded will, but they did not resist his secret or decreed will. When Pharaoh resisted the commanded will of God, he began rowing away from that will, but he only rowed himself right into the justice of God. Now then, the final application that we want to make this morning is this. We must never justify our sinning against God's revealed will. Just because we do something disobedient to God and good comes from it, we must never justify that act pleased God. Give an example of that, Pastor. All right. A lady came to me about a year ago. She said, now, sat in my home one day, and she said, God told me that I was to go over here and preach in this such and such church. And I said, oh, he did. I said, yes. He said, now, Pastor, I know that the Bible says that women aren't to preach, but God told me I just had to do it, so I had to go. Well, I'm glad God's not as confused as that dear lady is. God is not in a dilemma. And God has clearly revealed that the pulpit is not the place where a woman is to exercise her spiritual gift in the ministry of the gospel. Scriptures are clear about this. But you say, well, Pastor, I know some people that have been converted under women preachers. Therefore, good came out of that. Thus, God must have been pleased with it. Now, wait a minute. Look what you're falling into. God decreed that people were going to put his son to death. Did good come out of the death of Christ? How many of you believe that good came out of the death of Christ? Did it not? Was God pleased with those who put his son to death? Be careful in falling into this pattern. If good comes out of it, then God must have been pleased with it. Oh, yes. God brought much good out of the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, but my friend Peter stood on the day of Pentecost and he said to those people that had nailed Christ to the cross, you have taken and by wicked hands have crucified and slain that person. Now, just because that God converts souls under the ministry of an instrument which he has forbidden does not mean that God is then pleased with that instrument. And that's why that when we look out and we see individuals using all types of methods and approaches that are contrary to the revealed way that the gospel is to be ministered, and yet God is converting souls under those ministries, we must not then deduct, well, God must be pleased with that man and his approach. He would be no more pleased with him than he would be with the person who was putting his son to death. That person was acting in disobedience to God's revealed will. And the person who enters behind the pulpit who has no right to be there, which is forbidden by God's revealed will, is not pleasing to God. But nevertheless, God may bring good out of that. And there we rejoice and give God all the glory and not the instrument. Not unto us, O God, give glory, but unto the Lord. So that's why that when any soul is saved, we rejoice in it and give glory unto God. But we do not crown the preacher or the instrument, that we are but instruments in God's hand. Some plant, some water, and God brings forth the increase. So let us keep the instruments in the background. Those instruments, there is enough sin in every creature to send the world to hell. Even today in this message, there has been enough error to confuse that if God did not restrain some of it, you'd be so deceived that all of you would perish. There are no perfect human instruments in the propagation of the gospel. God did not call an angel without sin to preach the gospel. He called sinners to preach the gospel.